Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
Strap in, folks, because today's episode is going to light a fire under your assumptions.
That's right. Too many people are still stuck thinking college is the only path to success. Meanwhile, the trades are the real skills and are screaming for people who can actually do the work.
And let's be real, white-collar stability, that's a myth. One disruption, one downturn, one AI rollout, and boom, you're out on your ass if you don't have something solid to fall back on.
Exactly. This conversation isn't about doom and gloom. It's about opportunity. It's about self-reliance, grit, and rediscovering the kind of skills that can feed your family, keep a roof over your head, and give you confidence no paycheck can buy.
We're talking welding, trapping, hunting, fixing your own damn trailer when it breaks, things that make you unstoppable.
And we're diving into the bigger question. Why did schools strip this out? Why do so many young people grow up thinking the trades are less than?
This one's raw, it's real, and it'll get you fired up to rethink what you value, how you work, and what you're passing on to the next generation.
Buckle up, it's Blue Collar BS time.
Welcome back to Blue Collar BS, everyone. How are you doing today, Brad?
I am wonderful, Mr. Stephen Doyle. And how are you on this great, what is it? Oh, fuck, it's September. Shit. September already, Stephen.
It is, and it's very much fall, and I freaking love it. It's cool, and it's the leaves are starting to turn, and I am freaking loving it.
Too soon.
Too soon. Can't come soon enough. Be too fall soon. All season long. I'll take fall all season,
whatever.
All day,
whatever.
Every day. That's listen you. Here, Cupcake. It's fall
shut
time.
Up, you little millennial.
Let's go.
Fuck you.
Well, I can't help it that you like your PSLs. So, you what? Know, you and your PSLs can go over in the corner. Your pumpkin spice
latte. I don't know what
latte.
That is. You're going to have to help the old guy out as to what PSL is. I don't
your
know.
Your pumpkin spice latte. You and all the other suburban moms can go over in the corner.
Sure. Whatever, man. Whatever you say.
Yeah. Yep. So, who do we got on the show today, Brad?
Oh, we have a gentleman. His name is Zachary Hansen. He is the author of the book, The Trade Gap, which he was so kind to send to me. Adjunct professor of computer science at Boise State, avid hunter, data guy, does all sorts of things. The guy's off the grid. He is on the grid, off the grid, does trapping, just a very unique individual. And we talked about our trade stuff. We said, hey, let's get him on the show. So, Zach, welcome to the show from Boise, Idaho.
Which, by the way, screw you, Steve. Like, it is a 100-degree day here in Boise.
It is 64 and amazing right now. So I love it.
Like, I got 61 here. Armed, you'll be able to just see the sweat pooling off of me right now. I'm just
are
so
you
hot.
Serious? It's 100 in Boise today?
Yeah. We are on the finally, allegedly, the trend down back into the like September elk hunting weather you would expect.
Oh,
but it's not there yet. We're still 100-degree days for the next few, and then it has a steep drop off.
No, hard pass.
Day weather. Holy shit,
hard pass.
Yeah, I shot a deer on opening day for early velvet buck season. I drew a tag on August 15th, and we were at like 8,500 feet. And even at like 8 p.m. after we shot this deer and we're starting to butcher it, it was like 84 degrees on the side of a mountain. It was ridiculous.
Hard pass.
Better get some ice.
Hard pass.
Thankfully, we had a cool river to kind of get the meat down and cooled off before we had to hike out. But
oh, man. Hard pass. So,
yeah, because hiking out with a bunch of ice doesn't help.
So before we forget, Zach, which generation do you identify or fit in with?
Well, identification. I am a millennial. You know, I am a millennial, and I also identify as a millennial.
All right. All right.
You'd be surprised how some people will not go in that category. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's all good because there are many good things that come from every generation.
Yep.
Lots of opportunity. So what inspired you to write the book, The Trade Gap? I mean, let's just start there because there's some interesting things and facts and data that you did a bunch of research on. So
Honestly, it was just the absolute crotch kick of getting a severance package from a Fortune 500 company I was working for. So, I mean, to summarize it in the shortest means possible is I had gotten like, I fell into the college bus trap of millennials. You know, it was go to a trade school or you go to the vocational school in your district, you were dumb. That's just what we were being pushed where I was at, where I grew up. So right. I went down that path, took on loads of debt, followed the prescribed white picket fence manifest destiny, I guess you could call it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like a dog who caught up to a parked car finally, like after 6 years of higher education, debt, scraped into a job in the tech industry, got out of debt, started building a little bit of that life with my ex-wife, and it was hollow. It sucked. So long story short, I kind of got into hunting. That was like my little outlet. I was like, I'm going to become self-reliant because at the time, I was on planes every week. I was doing white collar work. I couldn't change the oil on my own car. I just didn't grow up around that stuff. So I went down a self-reliance path first and ended up moving to Idaho after a divorce, became a hunter, a trapper, learned to weld, do little odds and ends, just become more well-rounded as a human. And then the hammer finally dropped with my actual day job, something I never thought would happen because I'd been in the artificial intelligence space for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And what I saw then was
you were replaced by AI, were you?
Well, yeah, I built my own demise essentially. So who knew? You know, it's like you build your own gallows and they put you in it. But got to that point, and you know, I had the 6 months. Everybody said, "Have your 6 months of savings, you'll be good." All of a sudden, 6 months ticked by, 8 months ticked by, 11 months ticked by. I had kids and a family, and I was out of money. And the only thing that I had to fall back on to pay my mortgage were the skills or trades that I had. I was working in a taxidermy shop and I was trapping. I was trapping my ass off. I had government contracts. I was doing all sorts of stuff, but it sustained me until I did find another job in the tech industry. Mm-hmm. And that's what prompted me to write the book was like, the feebleness of white collar work right now is just true. Like there is going to be a downturn, a continued downturn. And we have so many skillless people. I was one of those people. I'm still like moderately skilled. Like, you know, I'm not somebody who's had a full career in anything. But the push for the book is for young kids to rethink education and be more generally educated. And for those that are in my world, to think about in your spare time, picking up some skills. Because best case scenario, it can be a lifeline. I mean, worst case scenario, it can be a lifeline. And best case scenario, you can fix some stuff around your house. You can be a more self-reliant, contributing individual to society. So that's the TLDR on the book.
What drove the self-reliance piece passion for you? What created that desire to become less reliant on others and more reliant on yourself? What was that trigger?
Man, this is not a continual plug of stuff, but I wrote a book called Turning Feral, which was about my like transition from like white-collar worker into like this more self-reliant individual. But trigger was just seeing stuff around me. Like I had a nice house, I had cars, but if anything broke, I couldn't fix it. I couldn't even begin to know where to fix it. It was, I was fully bought into the had to call a guy era. And frankly, it was embarrassment. I did all the masculine things. Like I've done wrestling, jujitsu since I was little. I still do. I was running ultra marathons. I was doing all this stuff. But at the end of the day, if the grid went down, and these were just little thoughts I had, like I didn't have kids at the time, but I was like, my wife and I would die. I would have to pray that a deer jumped in front of my car, that I could start a fire, which I might not even be able to do, drag that deer on and pick something edible off because I don't even know how to skin it. I don't even know where the rump roast is, like maybe on the ass. I don't know. So that was it. It was like an emasculate.
You could Google it.
I just went through.
You could Google it. Nice.
Yeah, assuming that that's up, right?
Right. So with the books and what you've seen, and specifically, because Brad and I, we're both college educated. We both worked in the white collar space, but had a lot of blue collar crossover. What have you seen when you're talking with others in that white collar space? Like what kind of trends are you seeing? with
self-reliant,
that?
Curious, man. Like, even with my first book, Turning Feral, you know, there's cool hunting stories. I mean, it's mostly my screw-ups learning to hunt as an adult, and it's comedic, and it's pretty good. But the majority of reach outs I had were from people like, I've been feeling the same way. I've been feeling that like scratch and itch that I don't know what would happen. I can't do things on my own. I have to rely on the grocery store to always be open and have their shelf stock.
Right.
And then the book came out right at COVID. And then you saw fights over toilet paper. You saw the grocery stores go. And I think that was the other trigger for people of like, oh, this is possible. Like, it's always been that kind of thing you push off. Like, it's never going to happen. We have such great, you know, supply chain here in the U.S. Things were always going to be there.
Right.
And then some people got their eyes open, myself included. So that was
always going to be there till it wasn't.
Right.
Yep. Yep. What was the most rewarding thing that you stumbled on?
Oh, man. In life or in like, because I mean, like I've stumbled on a lot of rewarding things. One's family. Like, you know, I got lucky that I didn't have kids with my ex-wife and I remarried to a wonderful woman and have great kids. That's one. But in the self-reliance space is just confidence, right? Like, you know, there is something that actually makes me a better white-collar worker, a better learner for blue-collar trades, just in knowing that I am capable. Capable to go learn. I might not ever be the best welder. I might not ever be the best electrician. I might not be the best database manager. But when you kind of dabble in like self-reliance and learning that you can provide for yourself and your family, it's a big crossover. So it crosses over into everything in your life. So I think that's the biggest thing I stumbled on that I wasn't expecting is community and just a bolstering of confidence across everything I do.
From your readers, what's the most astonishing thing that you've gotten from them?
Oh, there's just so many more people that are in the exact same boat. You know, I think everybody who writes a book or anybody who kind of puts their story out there, oftentimes it's like, oh, this is a me thing. Like, I don't think other people are feeling this way. Like, I must be some unique snowflake, but you're not. Like, there's so many people who are the exact
same. Are you sure? You just hurt my feelings, Zach.
Sorry, Brad. I hate to be the one to bear or the bearer of bad news, but no, you in fact are not. But
and you still identify as a millennial. Weird.
I know, right?
Very boomer X like of you.
I think I can coin a new term. Maybe I'm polygenerational.
Oh,
what?
Had anybody say that before? There you go. I can morph into anything there, Brad and Steve.
Yeah, wow.
Wow. That might be the episode title. Polygenerational, WTF.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I don't know. When my kids act up and I kind of go back to like the spanking mode, I'm definitely boomer-esque. So.
Oh, wooden spoon survivors. That's what we are.
I had the hole in the paddle, man. I went to a Christian school in the early 90s. So.
Yeah, but you were past the rubber-tipped map pointers.
Fair.
Right? So, because you were in digital at that point. Those map pointers, those things fucking hurt. Big-ass 4-foot-long stick with a big old rubber tip on the end of it. It's not comfortable.
But look how well-behaved you are now.
Exactly. just like Pavlov's dog. Perfect.
Yep.
So Zach, what are you seeing in, right, as you have gone into your hunting and into your trapping and into this, I don't want to call it survival, but self-reliant world? How are you seeing others in your peer group or above or below you from a generational perspective accepting that or being inquisitive about it? Or are they like, what the hell did you decide to do this for? What's that been like out in the world for you?
It's a mixed bag, right? Like, you know, my parents, like, they're fantastic. I have great parents. I grew up in a good household, very like lower middle class. My dad was an engineer, mom, stay-at-home mom. But again, we didn't grow up in this like farm to table or woods to table mentality. It was, you know, box processed foods, all that. So like when they saw it, granted, I'd had other life experiences a lot That
I mean, don't get me wrong. Elk is really, really fucking great stuff to eat. Don't get me wrong. I'd much rather have somebody get it for me than for me to go figure out how to go get it myself. So
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yes. It's a difficult endeavor, but my parents, of course, they're like, what are you doing? You know, they couldn't see the why, because they grew up in that boomer generation where things were great, mm-hmm. where things were always going to be great. They didn't see the grocery store till COVID, like things being stripped or things not being available. So they were a little questioning. Obviously, my peer groups in the technology world were like, okay, this guy lost his mind. He's like lost his marble. Yeah, completely cuckoo. You know, he's like Skynet's come in. You know, he's seen behind the curtain. He's talked to Oz, and now he's just running to the hills. But again, like it was a mixed bag, but I was consistently surprised how many people on Zoom calls who would see like my backgrounds. Like I might join a call after I moved out to the middle of nowhere and there'd be some animal and some version of undress behind me. And I just kind of accepted it and just put it up there. I didn't blur my screens. And I would have people I did not expect, people that I would have pegged as like vegetarians or like super metropolitan, reach out and be like, talk to me about this. Like, I'm thinking about like getting into hunting from like a conservation aspect or food. And
right.
You know, that again, it just is surprising how many people outwardly are afraid to say it, but are genuinely curious to explore what you call it, survivalism, self-reliance, whatever, than you would expect.
Yeah, I was just at an event today, getting some photos taken. The gentleman's doing the photos for me. He said, yeah, he's like, do you hunt? Because I brought my golf clubs and some of my musky stuff and different things. Like, no, I don't hunt. I never really got into it because I didn't have any land to do it. And he's like, yeah, I just started doing hunting as an adult and bow hunting and getting ready for deer next week here in Wisconsin. So it's like, okay, awesome. That's fantastic, right? He's got two young daughters that he's going to try to get them involved so that they can go out and go do the thing. And, you know, he's a older, I mean, if you don't have somebody around to teach you, it's really hard to get into.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, well, YouTube and all those things, like those were my mentors until I like moved to where I went to, which was middle of nowhere, met a few old timers, especially on the trapping front, who kind of helped me out. But, you know, we are in a fortunate space where you don't have to have drunk Uncle Billy ready and willing to drag you in the deer woods. Like, you can just go and do it.
How did you know my uncle's name was Billy?
You know, this is the ESP, man. Again, it's a polygenerational feel that I have.
That's from all the from everything that you've learned, what would you say is the most that was one, the most challenging, but two, what was the most rewarding?
Challenging, definitely. Personally. Yeah, for me personally, definitely trapping was definitely the most challenging, both from like a lack of mentorship and just from a practice, because it is very hard. Like, you think about hunting, even with a bow and arrow, you know, you might get 15 yards. That's kind of like the target, up to 80 yards away. Rifle, you can extend that out a significantly further distance depending on your proficiency. Mm-hmm. You know, trapping, you're trying to get a very smart, nose heavy animal to step on a 6x6 inch, you know, metal pan in the middle of 3,000 acres of national forest land. Difficult endeavor.
Yep.
Very, and very low yield, right?
Peanut butter. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I know, right? I wish that were I wish it were that easy. I end up getting caught in the trap every time I do that. Very big peanut butter cup here. But you know, the most satisfying truly was in that time frame that I was only trapping and doing taxidermy to kind of support my family. I also did at the local community college here in Boise a night welding course to get like a structural welding certificate. Mm-hmm. I think why that was most satisfying was not because I walked away with like, hey, I can slap two pieces of metal together, which was really cool, but it was just the idea that it's not out of the realm of possibility. And everything that I had been told about the trades was a lie.
Mm. And
I actually found so much intellectual stimulation at the end of a spark, like sitting there and like trying to get like a good bead and, you know, doing vertical welds, like all sorts of stuff. Like, I was locked in. Like, I've always sought out like flow states, if you will, like in jujitsu and ultra marathons. But all it did, took was me striking an arc and all of a sudden I was in it. My mm-hmm. screen would like be shaking and it would steady. You know, those mm-hmm. little things were really cool and something that I thought A, wasn't for me, and B, was just like less than, and I wouldn't find that intellectual stimulation, which, you know, I did.
Mm. There's a lot to learn, right? And that was always the hard part working in manufacturing on the office side of the wall, was everybody's like, oh, those guys don't know what they're talking about or what they're doing. Bullshit. They are the most mm-hmm. creative problem solvers and some of the smartest people on the planet, because the engineer gave them some piece of shit that can't be made, but we figured out how to make it anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to you, Engineer Doyle.
Mm, I got you. I actively ignored you. Actively.
Right.
Actively.
So when you were doing the research and things for the book, what was the one thing that was for the Trade Gap book? What was the one thing that just popped out to you as the most impactful as you were putting that together?
Oh, geez, man. There's a lot in the book. Like, you know, it's a historical accounting from the early 1900s of...
Right, because, I mean, you did a bunch of research to get this thing together. This isn't just a guy throwing his own pontification into a book to say I published a book. There's some good stuff in there as far as the history and research. And that's why I want to know what was the aha moment.
You know, the aha moment was, you know, again, I never thought of the trades. Even when I kind of started doing self-reliance stuff, like I was picking up things here and there, but they were self-serving. I never reflected back on why did I not have a shop class in my high school, even though I was in a relatively rural urban area of South Carolina.
Yep.
So the big two takeaways for me, one was just the different education acts from the 50s up until the No Child Left Behind Act, how all of those different things really came together to just bend trades over the barrel, frankly, and just remove it from our schools.
Mm-hmm.
That was one. But like the most interesting like statistic was, again, millennial, high school graduating year of 2007, we had 3.3 million graduates nationwide across the U.S. Of those, 67% went to a higher education, two-year, four-year paying degree program. You throw mm-hmm. some scholarships in there, but most people are paying out of pocket. A large part maybe went to the military. You could argue you could learn a trade there. Another chunk did nothing, just didn't go beyond high school education. But of those 3.3 million in 2007, only like 250,000 went to a trade school. And mm-hmm. that's what started to really blow my mind, is I was relying on the call guy era to continue forever, that because I wasn't going to learn a trade. I wasn't going to learn how to fix my toilet. But mm-hmm. you just look at the math. You know, I have a graduate degree in statistics from Johns Hopkins. I can do the simple math to see that this doesn't add up. Like, this is a problem. Yeah. And like, you know, you hear Mike Rowe talk about it. You hear other people mm-hmm. talk about it. You guys talk about it. But until you just sit down and look at it on paper and you just go, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the biggest takeaway for me, and what also prompted me to actually go through the act of finishing the writing and publishing a book that I, you know, frankly, I'm not a blue collar worker. Like, I shouldn't be the authority here, but it was just mm-hmm. so patently obvious that I'm like, well, whether this goes anywhere or not, I'm going to publish this book because it should be heard.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate it. I appreciate sending a copy, and I've thumbed through it. I have not read it, to be honest with you, but it's there. And I know, just
because you're
catching some of the data, catching some of the research, like, okay, this is good. And we talked about that in our initial conversation. It was your passion for the self-reliance is really important. And the message to the youth is to go figure it out, go try something. It doesn't have to be your career, but it can be something, whether it's a side hustle or whether it's just take care of your own stuff, right?
Well, I mean, I think about my undergrad, you know, career. I worked some odd jobs. I worked in a cigar shop, but like it would have been no hair off my back to go and do that same night welding school and pick up some welding jobs that would have paid significantly more than any of the hourly wage work that I was picking up, because I thought it was less than. I just didn't know it was an option.
Right. You're the key right there. You thought it was less than, and your peer group probably would have laughed at you.
Yeah.
What are you doing to go work in that factory for?
Yeah.
You probably would have met some great mentors and had some, you know, George who'd been there 30 years willing to teach you something that could have changed things sooner for you, possibly.
Mm-hmm. And again, or worst case, I just know how to weld.
Correct.
Yep.
Cool.
Right. Make mm-hmm. sparks.
No.
Yep.
All right. So here's a new feature we got on the show. It's called Rapid Fire.
Okay. So, I'm ready.
So we're going to ask you a bunch of questions. They should be relatively simple. Shouldn't take a lot of time to think about them.
I don't know. I'm an overthinker. So we'll see. I might be able to challenge you on that one. Unless you
Dumbest thing you ever heard in a meeting.
Dumbest thing I've ever heard in a meeting. From a boomer, how do I turn the camera on? Most of my meetings are digital, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
Favorite blue collar skill you wish more people had?
Ooh. Just from where I live, I'm going to say welding, because we have our local firehouse. Like, I end up kind of playing around with some of that. Like, everything breaks. Everything rusts. Everything needs fixing. That's what got me into is I broke a trailer. And I was like, well, this is going to be an expensive thing to replace. Oh, or you can just fix it. Mm-hmm. So, welding. Definitely recency bias on that one, but it's my answer.
Okay. Coffee or energy drink?
Coffee.
Favorite curse word?
Mm, fuck.
favorite candy? Favorite candy.
Ooh, this is a new one that's kind of propped up. I'm not a big sweets guy, but Nerd gummies on Hunts are pretty good.
Oh. Nerd gummies are good.
No.
Pass. Nerd gummies are good. Text or call?
Millennial text.
Best pizza topping?
Ooh, pepperoni.
Favorite music?
Classic rock.
Favorite sport?
Jiu-jitsu.
Ginger or Marianne?
Ginger.
All right. Wasn't that hard, was it?
I'm more impressed that he knew.
Hey, I said polygenerational.
I knew he'd figure that one out. So Zach, people want to get your book. People want to get in contact with you, whether it's for hunting skills, taxidermy, all the things that are out there, because you are a well-versed guy. How do people find you? Where do they find you? How do they get in contact with you?
Oh, boy. I mean, kind of all over the place. You know, we connected through LinkedIn. I am on there. Instagram is at Let Me Die Learning. You can pick up any of my books, Turning Feral, The Trade Gap, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart.com, really any of the online retailers carry it.
Awesome. Well, I know you have a very busy hunting season coming up here, right? Because you're going to be gone probably starting next week through December.
Actually, September's light for me. I'm not doing archery elk this year, but then we'll start doing some deer and elk with buddies. Trapping season then starts. Then I'm a licensed guide in Montana, so I'll be doing some mule deer guiding in October, November. And then back to do late season archery elk in Idaho in mid-November. So yeah, really running through the whole year.
Nice.
That's fantastic. Awesome.
Well, best of luck to you. Stay safe. And enjoy the fruits of the land.
Will do. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, man. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Zach.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue collar businesses strong for generations to come.